So you can have somebody that has good character and you think they'd fit great in the culture, and based on their resume, they seem to be very competent. But at the end of the day, are they going to truly be committed, especially in a PE world, PE universe, where I'm looking for folks that have grit, stick-to-itiveness, folks that are really looking to go the distance. And we do our best. There are times that we don't make the right hire, but we definitely limit the number of times that we miss.
Private equity doesn't reward incremental thinking. It rewards leaders who can scale under pressure, build systems that outperform, and push past what most teams believe is possible. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Peter Platten. Peter is the Chief Revenue Officer of Protos Securities. He joined the company in 2020 and has helped lead its transformation from a $150 million organization to a $750 million revenue firm today. In today's show, we explore what it really takes to grow fast in a private equity environment. And we discuss why pushing the possible starts with mindset and how leaders can build teams that overshoot goals instead of simply meeting them. We talk about the four-move framework that Peter uses to scale growth, which includes laying the foundation, optimizing the service chain, driving company-wide accountability, and building for the future. We talk about why systems thinking and not siloed optimization is the real key to unlocking exponential growth. And we explore how data, technology, and AI can create pricing power and long-term enterprise value in what many consider a traditional service business. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Peter Platten. There are a lot of companies out there that are owned by private equity, and yours is one of them. But very few of these PE-backed companies have had the kind of success that your firm has had, and you're the chief revenue officer of the firm. So I'd love for you to start by just setting some context here in terms of what is a little bit different trying to grow a PE-backed company versus, say, another company that is still run by the founder.
So I think the transition from a founder-led, and I was pretty close to this when I stepped into my role with this current organization. We were about 150 million at the time. The founders, they started the company in 2006 and did a fantastic job. And they knew that they needed to pass the baton to be able to really achieve what they knew this business could achieve. So in the PE space, the difference, the hyper growth. As a founder, we find with many of the acquisitions we do, the founders do a great job at growing, but they're not growing necessarily under pressure, let's just say. They have their own pressure. I mean, not to take that away from them, but private equity pressure is a bit different. You enter into an engagement and you have certain milestones and targets that you need to hit based on thesis and so forth. So it's just a bit different.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I'm imagining that you've got some kind of process or framework or philosophy that you implement as it relates to how do you grow fast in an environment that might be a little more pressure, or certainly a different kind of pressure than if you're still a founder-owned and founder-led company. So why don't you start there with what's a high-level way that you think about how you grow fast in a PE environment?
So, fortunately, my entire career has been focused on growth. And I guess you could say I've built a muscle over a period of time to overshoot goals. So, that's a mentality that I've built and adopted and built. And I work with my teams to set that new standard of what's acceptable. And that's a large part of my philosophy. I have a lot to learn always. I'm always learning and always improving. But I think we've dialed in on some great things and how you can take a business from the 150 when I stepped in, and we're at three quarters of a billion now over a 5 year period of time. It's significant growth. Not all organic. There's M&A in there as well, but our organic success has been something as well.
What role does mindset play in all of this?
Large part. And we'll get into it, I'm sure, as we continue to go. But I think the limits that we set between our ears within our within ourselves. And so having good leadership, but having a good leadership team that is willing to really push the possible, what I call pushing the possible, I think definitely a differentiator in the space. And that's how we approach the market.
So pushing the possible, let's pull on that here just a little bit. Tell me a little bit more about what you mean, because I heard you say just a second ago that you try to exceed the goals, Well, I'm going to suggest, as you well know, that in a PE environment, you're already going to have really high goals. And so it's almost as if, are you setting yourself up for failure if you're trying to exceed already high goals? So tell me a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Some folks will say, well, it's too difficult or it's too lofty. But the thing is, we'll take a look at what our goals are. We take a look at what the time period is, and then we'll work backwards. And by doing that, we're able to get more intentional as opposed to hopeful. And when we look at what those goals need to be, building our structure is to account for the overage. Because I know that if we set our goal on 100 million or 200 million, we're going to come in at 50 million or 150 million. So we set those goals a bit higher to build in some insurance around the process. And then we just have to make sure that we attract the right talent, apply the right processes, structure, training, and technology to support us in that effort.
Now, we all know that to grow, you need strategy, you need execution. Do you think about those two things any differently than how we might normally think about strategy and execution?
I do in the fact that when you look at a PE-backed environment and transformation, that's more of a system. That's not a single lever. A system's the only change when strategy and execution are working together. So I think it's a holistic approach. You have to look at the entire ecosystem of what it is that you're working to achieve.
And do you have like a series of steps that you go through when you think about the strategy and the execution piece, and how do you actually lead the team through breakneck growth?
Yeah, we do. As I mentioned, I look at everything as structure, people, process, talent, and technology and the training component. But I think when you look at the strategy and the execution, you can't have one without the other. There has to be harmony between the two. And that's the only way that I think you can achieve big results. So with the team, with the planning, we got to get the right people on the rocket, I call it, getting the right people doing the right things at the right times. That's how we approach it.
And you touched on mindset here just a moment ago. Do you hire people who already have that, let's call it exponential thinking mindset versus an incremental thinking mindset? Or do you have to work with the people that you have? Now, obviously, you can change people out, of course. But if you have someone who's like, hey, this person's a keeper, but boy, we got to really elevate their thinking here. So, if so, how do you elevate the thinking of someone on the team so that they have this transformational, exponential type of mindset versus an incremental, linear mindset?
Yeah, it's not an easy one. It's a good point. And this is not just in the sales account management ranks. This is all throughout what I call the service chain. So the folks that are supporting this growth, the folks that are realizing the value proposition that is put into the marketplace and that is sold to a customer, to a client, every single one of them, you have to work with them to help build their muscle to think big, to act big, to operate big. We look for folks that in their background, they're not folks that are willing to settle. They're not folks that are B players. They welcome the opportunity to go beyond the expectation or challenge what's acceptable and to not settle. And that's part of, that was a big initiative we had last year within my current organization around our branding and around our go-to-market. And a slogan that we've taken on is that we're security that never settles. And it's because we know that it's about continuous improvement. We know it's about getting better every day and not letting up.
So this idea of really trying to lay the foundation, trying to prepare for scalable growth along those lines, you talked about having this big, bold, long-term goal, and then you're working backwards from that. So how far into the future do you set that out? Are you looking at 3 years, 5 years, 1 year, tomorrow? What kind of time frame are you looking at when you're setting this longer-term goal?
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOcoachingInternational.com.
I use a 5 year.
5 year.
Yes, always use 5 year. I dabble. further than that. But I don't like to be surprised. And especially in a private equity world, I'm always, working to be ahead of the game. I want to be proactive as possible. When I think about that build, it's not about solving for the problem today, but it's about the chess match. So what am I setting up for? What are the moves 10, 12 months down the road that we need to be making so that we are on solid ground 5 years from now?
And for a five-year vision, give me an idea of what is in that. Is it all numerical goals? Is it qualitative goals? Is it both? Give me like a sense for, here might be a few examples of what could be in a five-year goal for a PE-backed firm that wants to grow exponentially.
Absolutely. No, qualitative and quantitative. So when we look at it, the first 4 years that I was in my current organization, it was a process of building the plane while we were flying and going very quickly and always looking at, okay, do we have the right talent? Do we need to level up on our talent? Do we need, and thinking about 5 years into the future, knowing what sort of numbers we're going to have to live by, knowing what our OPEX structure, CAPEX structure, knowing what our EBITDA margins, knowing what these goals are, and knowing what our exit economics and the value creation plan that we have to take all those things into consideration and make sure that we have the right talent, the right processes, the right systems, the right approach in place. Obviously, any PE-backed business is going to have rate of return and multiple goals. So what we'll do is we don't tie the team up in that. The management team doesn't tie the rest of the folks up. But what we will do is tie it to a revenue goal, tie it to even tie it to margin goals, OPEX containment, whatever that may be. For us coming into, I knew in 2021, I knew that we would get to a place where we need to produce $300 million in sales. But that wasn't in 2021. And so setting the structure, getting the right folks doing the right things, we started doing that in 2021. So yes, it's very much going to come down to revenue targets. And something I won't do with my team is say, hey, let's just look at 10% growth for next year. No, it's going to be, how do we triple our revenue in the next 24 months? How do we get, while maintaining a 97% client retention rate and pick up 100 basis points in EBITDA margin, whatever the case is. So it's going to be their lofty goals. Like I said earlier, when you have the map and you can put that in place, then in some of the things I do with gamification and some other things, we work toward those goals. So we work to realize them.
You've talked about people a few times here. So tell me a little bit more about how you go about finding and assessing the right people for the firm.
Myself and the organization has taken this on as well. So I have sort of a way that I approach the recruiting process or what I'm looking for. And it's what I call the four C's. And it's character, commitment, competency, and culture. And those things, I have a rubric, essentially, that marries up to those things. And if one of them is off, then it just doesn't work. So you can have somebody that has good character and you think they'd fit great in the culture. And based on their resume, they seem to be very competent. But at the end of the day, are they going to truly be committed, especially in a PE world, PE universe, where I'm looking for folks that have grit, stick-to-itiveness, folks that are really looking to go the distance. So it's important that we identify folks that have all four, and we do our best. There are times that we don't make the right hire, but we definitely limit the number of times that we miss.
I'm going to ask you a question, which is kind of like asking, who's your favorite child? So look at these four C's: character, commitment, competency, and culture. You need all four, and I totally understand that. But if you had to rank the four in terms of, this is the number one most important, this is number two, this is number three, this is number four, and I need all of these, but I really got to have this first one and the second one, they've got to be like a 10 out of 10 on those. How would you rank those four?
In a PE environment, commitment. Like I said, it's folks that are going to stick to it, folks that are going to go the distance. Obviously, I'm not saying that I'm only taking commitment and the others don't
right.
exist. What I'm saying is what leads the pack. It is commitment. Character, obviously, extremely important. Competency and culture are all important, but commitment is what I look to in this environment.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit here about this laying the foundation, preparing for scalable growth. What would be a next step here or another move here you could take?
Something I think it's extremely important is this process of teaching the why behind the why. And an example that I use, I have a 19-year-old son in college, and ever since he was a little guy, I always played a game with him of good choice, bad choice, good decision, bad decision. If a celebrity broke the law or an athlete created a personal foul on the field, I'd turn to him and I'd say, hey, good choice, bad choice. He said, bad choice, Dad. And so that was my way of developing a moral compass or a decision compass with him, because I knew that I wouldn't be able to be with him at all times, everywhere. And so I take that same sort of approach in teaching the why behind the why. I think it gives our people that decision compass. All we're doing is creating followers who wait around instead of leaders that think and act and make decisions. So the why behind the why, I think, is extremely important. So as far as move one, we wrap up for laying the foundation. And then the next step we take is we look at how do what we call the service chain. How do we optimize the service chain? So this is not a concept that I created. I was frustrated in a past organization with our ability to live up to service obligations. And so based on my exposure to supply chain world, I thought there's got to be a better way in how you deploy and fulfill on these service obligations. And so I went in search of this, and some Harvard professors in the late 90s had written a book about it, and some other books have been written along the way. And it's a philosophy that we've applied in our business. So it's step number two in the process.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that because I think I heard you use the word system earlier. And I think sometimes people can make a mistake of trying to optimize this little piece of a process without thinking about, well, how does this piece, if I optimize this, how might that affect this other thing over on the other side of the warehouse or other side of the
Sure.
world from our other office? So do you try to view the whole service chain as one big system that you have to optimize the system, and that may mean we have to make trade-offs on the individual parts, or how do you think about that?
Yes, absolutely. And you're spot on. It's one of the most difficult things to do within an organization, I believe, is to optimize the service chain because it takes a lot of consistency and buy-in. And the thing that folks, if they get off the tracks, they'll get focused on their department, on their link in the chain, and they slip back into their silos. And that's, we definitely do not want that. And so the idea is, like in my current organization, we host a biweekly meeting that is specifically structured to drive cross collaboration and to make sure that people understand what their impact is, both upstream and downstream from the moves that they make within their department. So we work to drive a full chain mentality so that people know that they're influencing things beyond their specific department, their function, with every move they make. And so that's what we work to do. Those biweekly meetings help significantly in making sure that that communication is open and consistent.
And in those meetings, is that at even to the lowest level of the organization, or is it like just managers and above are in that kind of meeting, or directors and above, or is it like everybody?
No, it's primarily directors. It's functional leads for each of the areas. So, you'll have VPs down to directors that are involved.
Okay. Do you have any examples of how systems thinking like this, as opposed to just trying to optimize each little piece along the whole service chain, do you have any examples of how sort of the system thinking actually unlocked big growth in something or reduced errors or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my current company is we're a managed service provider, and I've been responsible for developing what I call our next generation supplier program. So obviously, as an MSP, our subcontractors that we deal with, they're extremely important to us because they're fulfilling on our obligations for our clients. And the changes that we made with that program that impacted not just externally, internally were significant, but it also, when we look at the improvements, it led us to greater margins, stronger supplier relationships, improved service quality, and our expanded network as a whole, which improved the quality of life for the folks internally as well because of the options they had and the ability, the greater support we gave them to live up to and provide great service to our client base.
All chains, all systems have bottlenecks here and there and over time. So when you look at bottlenecks, when you diagnose bottlenecks, have you found any common patterns that repeat over time?
Yes, what I had mentioned earlier is when folks lose sight of the chain and they get focused strictly on their link in that chain, because they stop doing what brought shared success. And so you can see it quickly, fairly quickly, especially with the mechanisms that we have in place and measuring our service chain and the different signal stacks that we have built. But it's almost always, it leads back to that very thing, that somebody got caught up in what they were working on and they stopped contributing to that shared success.
Okay, so almost as if you got to be bifocal here in the sense that, yeah, I've got my job that I got to do. I got to make sure that I do that 100%. But then I also got to keep in mind the big picture, like how does my thing that I do fit into the whole system here? And I have to make sure that I'm considering both of those. Otherwise, we are going to have a chink in the armor here, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so second move here, optimize the service chain. What would be a third move here?
Third move, we look to drive what I call company-wide accountability. We get what I call getting visible with that. And it's examples, you want to lose weight, tell the world. You want to run a marathon, tell the world. Or like my SVP of marketing says, tell a toddler, because they'll never let you forget it. So we get visible with what our goals are, and that helps us drive our accountability.
And when you say visible, are you doing things like you're putting stuff up on the wall in every office and you're having thermometers that show progress toward a goal or that sort of thing? Or tell me a little bit more about physically and tangibly, how do you make these things visible?
Absolutely. So it's both internal and external. So I mentioned earlier that last year we went through a next generation of our branding, our modernized branding. And a large part of that, we have things that we put in place, like I said, security that never settles. We also created something called the Protos Promise, where everybody got involved from the C team to the field team. Everybody wrote out their Protos Promise. Those were put up in every office and it was very visible for everybody to see. We have visibility around our results, our sales results, around our measurement of fulfilled hours for the obligations we have to clients, a number of things. And then you have the external, which some of those things I mentioned are, they are internal, but they are also external. And it's the commitment that we've made to our clients. We will not settle. Yes, we're in the service-based business. We deal with people. There are times that we are going to make a mistake or screw up, but we won't settle. We'll make sure that we get it right. We consider ourselves relentless client advocates. We advocate for the clients. And then looking at our modern security experience that we promise to our clients. So you look at a Costco or you look at a Patagonia, you look at a brand and they have slogans. And a Costco slogan is do the right thing. And it's really about member value and not maxing out margins. So you can't say things like that, but then live contrary to your slogan. And so we believe in getting vocal and visible with our promises to not just our clients in the marketplace, but also to our employees and to our teammates.
So you talk about making it visible. You talk about things like the Protos Promise. You talk about a slogan. How do you ensure that that kind of stuff isn't met with an eye roll by your team members? Oh, here comes another pronouncement down from corporate on high, and we got to do this, we got to do that. And when I go walk by the plaque on the wall that has our values, I'm going to bow and pretend like I'm paying attention, but I'm really not. So how do you make sure that this stuff isn't just a cliche and is really something that everybody on the team buys into, they live and breathe it, and it's a real competitive advantage?
I think it's how you approach it. When we developed everything I just mentioned, we didn't do it in a vacuum. We had all the teams involved. We have pretty great practices in place to elicit input from all levels of our organization. People can submit suggestions for modifications to, you know, a workflow process, to ideas they have about onboarding a new supplier, whatever the case is, especially around these things, is that we got the buy-in and we have to live up to it as a management team. We have to live it, breathe it, and we need our team, we need our folks to feel that. And that's a great part. The CEO of our organization, he's been such a phenomenal partner and supports this very much. He really, we call it bleeding green. It's green's our primary color for our organization. That's how we focus on the success of the program. And I think we highlight every win. So internally, we have nomination process for employees who go above and beyond type of thing. People who live our mission, vision, values. We recognize folks in all ranks when we receive great feedback from a client. And it's part of our DNA. It's part of our internal language that we use.
And do you think of accountability as a cultural standard, or are you trying to instill it more as a personal standard that you need to be accountable, or both, or something different?
It's both. I read a great article recently about Shake Shack, and I can't remember exactly what they call it, but the founder of Shake Shack found a way to get folks involved and take ownership. And if there's a napkin on the floor, they pick it up. If something wrong and the towels are out in the bathroom, replace them, whatever the case is. And it drove significant success for the organization, which when the organization does well, the folks do well, the teammates do well. So we want to take it down to personal accountability. But when your accountability sticks, I think, is when expectations are bold, they're visible, and they're consistently messaged. And so we work those three things internally and externally at all times.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Danny Meyer, who founded Shake Shack, among other high-end restaurants. And what you may be referring to is what he calls constant gentle pressure. He wants to hold people accountable, but he wants to do it in a loving way. But he wants to make sure that they get the message and not a top-down command and control kind of way. But hey, yeah. I love you, but you got to step it up here, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. So that was number three here, really driving accountability, company-wide accountability. Is there a fourth move?
It's building for the future. So we take into account, we look at data, technology, long-term pricing power. What do we need to do to build value within the organization to be able to earn pricing power? So that's number four.
Speaking of data technology, I'm not going to let you get away without asking about AI. So how are you guys thinking about AI right now? How are you integrating that? How is that affecting the sales area, which you're heading up here?
At our nucleus, we started as a software business. And the founders of our organization, they identified gaps in the industry, and they figured out how to solve for those gaps utilizing software. And so we run our business, our ecosystem operation, we run on our software. Now, what's important about that, with that software, with the data, because our clients, that's a massive requirement, is for data transparency and really the consistency and integrity of that data, it's extremely important. So we've worked really hard on structured data. And because of that, we believe that we're ahead of the game in utilizing or leveraging LLMs and in artificial intelligence. And so we're doing that. We're using AI in all the different ranks, all the different departments throughout the organization, whether it be maybe off the shelf stuff that we're using, but we're also, I've been heading up a large proprietary AI project and utilizing our data to do so. And that project is all around what we call labor expense intelligence. So we've been working hard on building that.
So you guys are in the security business. Now tell me, how did you, because when I think of that, I think like human beings, like protecting premises, or human beings protecting executives, or human beings making sure that money is being moved safely from one location to another, or stuff like that. So tell me more about how you use software in the security business, because I think this might open up some people's minds in terms of how to think about the technology in what you may think is more of a human type business.
Right. And you're correct. Physical security is about people. And what we did is it's the marrying of high tech and high touch. So that software, it helps us with our deployment and fulfillment process. So all of our suppliers, whether it be in the uniformed guarding area or it be in the off-duty law enforcement service line, all of them are utilizing our application, and that application is feeding our system. And that system is in place to ensure that we have the right people at the right place doing the right things at the right times.
Okay, so I want you to pull this together for me. So I think if I've taken good notes here, you've laid this out. First move is like laying the foundation. What do you need to do to prepare for scalable growth? Second is you really need to think in a systems framework to really optimize the full extent of your chain of service, whatever it is you're providing or the product that you're manufacturing. A third is you really got to have company-wide accountability. And then the fourth is really building for the future, thinking about how are you using data, technology, and how that may lead to some pricing power. So If you think about those four steps as a leader, what may be underappreciated about those steps, or what might be the most difficult part of trying to actually execute on this framework that you've laid out?
I think it's what I said earlier. It's optimizing the service chain, especially again in a private equity world where things are moving very, very quickly. We say that we live in dog years and we're moving quickly. So it's easy to get caught up and take your focus off the entire chain and to get siloed on what you're doing. And that's not just the folks that are leading, the functional leads of the departments. That can fall on the management team as well. We have constant initiatives that are pushed down to us and things that we need to execute on. We've got a robust value creation plan that we're working hard on and living up to every day. And so our ability to stay focused and consistent with the service chain, it's going to ensure that we're supporting our people properly and that we're supporting the clients properly and giving the best value experience that we can.
Let's say that you are standing in front of a room. You've got 100 leaders of PE-backed firms, and they are anxiously awaiting wisdom from you. And what you're going to share with them is, okay, guys and gals, here's the most important thing that you can do as a leader of your organization over the next 90 days that's going to have the biggest impact on your business over the next 5 years. What are you going to say to them?
Like I said earlier, get visible. And I don't mean the wireless company. I mean, make, you know, the expectations, the goals and progress visible across your entire ecosystem. Because once it's out there, people want to live up to the scoreboard, if you will. And I think getting visible is extremely important. I think it's the quickest way to get movement in the business.
Excellent. All right. Well, Peter, as we wrap up here, is there any final thought, comment, observation that you want to share? And of course, tell us if people want to learn more about you or Protos, what's the best way to connect?
Absolutely. I appreciate this opportunity. This has been great. When I think about pushing the possible and what that means, the limit really is what leaders are willing to accept. So if you can just figure out how to push past that, I think you find what's possible. We're doing that at Protos. We have a large addressable market that we believe we can bring significant value to the marketplace. We've grown like crazy. We're the fourth largest in the nation, but there's a large gap between us and number three. And we continue the pursuit of client experience and driving client value and continue to refine how we approach the business and how we live up to that value. So I'd love to have people look us up, reach out to me with any questions you may have, and I'd love to connect.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.